Mormon Matters Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and is seeking to build financial support separate from Mormon Stories Podcast. All donations to Mormon Matters are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonmatters.org.
And I know, Hannah, you are crunched for time, so let's do our best to don't want to shortchange this, but I really, so maybe we'll just throw to you first to really say whatever you want to say about, okay, we kind of learned in your own journey where the shift to 19 is, but in general, if you were to kind of take out your own worries about indoctrination and not sure that you want to be in a mission yourself, read the tea leaves for an influx of, let's say, I'm guessing it's around 20% are sister missionaries now, 20 to 25%. Would you guess that we're going to go up to 40% of missions will now be sister missionaries? I'd love you to talk about the effects on what you think that would do to a mission and then to, you know, marriages when more husbands are marrying, you know, husbands and wives have both been on missions and things like that. I want to give you your chance to give your biggest shout outs on anything you're thinking right now.
Sure, yeah. I think that it'll definitely have a huge effect on missions in particular, and I'm really hoping it'll improve the image of sister missionaries in the church. I know that a lot of people are of the opinion that sister missionaries are so great. They can get into houses. Elders can't. Sister missionaries are so much more mature. They have a special spirit about them. But really, while I've been at BYU, I've encountered a lot of people, especially young returned male missionaries, who had extremely negative views of sister missionaries that I wasn't expecting. And before my feminist transition, or before, I guess, my faith transition, but after I already had knew I was a feminist, it made me really angry to hear stories of LDS men saying, you know, saying explicitly, one elder is the same as 10 sister missionaries. Because sister missionaries are just so emotional, they require, you know, help from the elders to get anything done. And so I think that as far as missions go, I'm not sure what the increase will be as far as percentages of how that'll change. I think we'll definitely see a huge bump initially. So I'm hoping that on missions, or in the mission culture at least, women will go from being just supplements or accessories to, you know, instead they'll become much more ingrained and much more respected, and hopefully that will lead to them being given more leadership roles,
right,
rather than just coordinating sisters, but that they'll actually become much more respected and given more responsibility within the mission. And hopefully this will also, having become more respected in the missions as well, hopefully that'll transition into just the marriage culture. From what I've seen at BYU, again, my perspective is limited because I am only 19, but I know that I've had very different experiences in just the last two student wards that I've been in, my young single adult wards. I was in a ward last year where it felt like all of our really society lessons were basically just sharing quotes and then talking about how they made us feel. And most of the girls in the ward were just young sophomore girls. There was one girl who was an RM, and I remember when she moved in, the other girls in the ward were like, why did she choose to come live here? So I think that there's this kind of part of the culture of BYU almost is that you'll rely on your husband to be the scriptorian in the family, and you just need to work on your things. But kind of being an expert on the gospel, on gospel knowledge, is for the priesthood holders.
Wow.
Whereas in the ward that I'm in now, there's a lot of RM girls, and there's the lessons in young women's and, or not young women's, in Relief Society and in Sunday school are much, much more scriptural based. There's a lot of mission stories that are shared, and there's not at all that idea that we're just going to be relying on our husbands. And so I'm hoping that that's just a microcosm of the change that could sweep across the LDS church if we have more women serving missions, is that instead of, you know, just having the men spend 2 years hardcore studying the gospel and then become these, I'm not to say that you become an expert on scriptures just because you serve a mission,
right,
but I'm hoping that much more, there'll be a lot more equality in the marriage, much more parity as far as being experts on the gospel knowledge. And I think that we'll definitely see that as we see more sister missionaries come back from their missions.
Those are terrific. Thank you so much. Can you stick around for another couple minutes, or do you need to go right now?
Okay. Yeah, no, I can stay a little bit longer.
Let me just ask one more sort of area of it. Joanna Brooks, did you have a chance to read her Ask Mormon Girl today?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The focus for me, and just to let everybody know, earlier today I had her record sort of an excerpted version of that. I'm going to release it as a Matters of the Heart here at about the same time that we're going to release this podcast. And it's just wonderful as a little 7-8 minute essay sort of to hear. And her focus there was, this changes the narrative. This, you know, because up until the time you're 18 as a young woman, you're you know, you love God, you're studying the scriptures, the gospel, and things like that. And then the 18-year-old guys are all of a sudden for doing this, and you're saying, I want to do that too, and now I can't. And there's this sort of internalized message that you get that, you know, marriage is so much more important than motherhood, that your womb, all these different things are really, you know, far more important than that. And so for her, the tears that flowed and the excitement that she has in this essay is just about, this changes the script. Do you sense that that's going to be the case? I mean, you're kind of caught now. You know, like you said, it was a year earlier. You know, your script would have, would have jumped in with the script. But do you sense that for the 16, 17-year-olds now, they're going to get less of a, mission only if you're not married. It's still marriage. Are we going to see it in the young women's leadership?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is purely, I guess, this is purely speculation, purely just my perspective, but I think that what the feeling that I got watching, you know, the reactions, I have friends on Facebook who canceled their semester study abroad plan so that they can start the mission papers right now and leave.
Oh, wow.
And I'm seeing it kind of sweeping over the women, but the kind of almost the sense that I'm getting is that it's almost like the church values their service now. Whereas before it was kind of, you know, if you don't get married, then maybe consider this and maybe go on a mission. But it was always with those asterisks. Whereas now it's saying, you know, here you can go whenever it's convenient for you. We would love to have you serve if you would like to. And I think that there's almost the sense that, wow, you know, it's so much more valued. It's not just a plan B kind of thing. I think that for a lot of women, it feels like, yes, you know, serving a mission is no longer just for frumpy girls who can get married,
right.
But now it's going
feminists like Maxine and frumpies, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but now it's actually going to be, you know, you have as much to contribute to spreading and sharing this gospel as the young men do, and if this is something that you're interested in, then we would love to have you do that. And I think, you know, there's the cynical side saying, you know, hopefully this will mean that girls will come back and then get married faster, or, you know, things like that. But I think that there's a lot to be said for women in the church feeling that this kind of validates their commitment to the gospel, saying, awesome. Yes, the church leaders really do value your missionary service as much as they do a man, and now you have the opportunity to execute that.
And I do think in a few years after more have gone on missions, the young women leaders that are more returned missionaries and things, that message will be internalized even more. So I'm thrilled for that. I want to ask you one more thing before I lose you. Okay. My immediate speculation is, now I have a daughter who turns 19 in January. I'm trying to back off on not like putting any hopes or whatever. My dream would be, I'd love to see her go on a mission, things like that. But, you know, she has a boyfriend who's also turning 19, and he's getting his papers in and stuff like that. Have you been hearing from your friends like, oh, I was going to have to wait for Mark, you know, or John or whatever the missionary is, but I'll just go on a mission now and we'll basically be gone together and it'll be a lot easier. And I'm just kind of guessing that might be a shift for a lot of young women. Is that, you know, besides this new messaging and stuff, which is where I'd rather have it do, I have a feeling that this might happen. Have you heard anything or speculated yourself on
that? Well, I definitely, maybe, I'm not sure if you guys are seeing this as much, but I've definitely been hearing a lot about it on Facebook and in social circles about just the effect that this will have on the dating culture of Mormons. It's been hilarious to see how many of the kind of older RM, my older RM friends, the males, posting Facebook statuses saying, well, there goes my dating pool. You know, they're kind of disappointed almost that all of a sudden so many of these girls will be going. And it just reminds me of last semester I went to a state conference, and I was one of the times that I've walked out of a church meeting, but it was because some man gave up and gave a talk about emphasizing that, you know, women, you need to think more carefully before you go on missions, because you're going on missions and you're just taking away. The young men don't have enough, you know, mature young ladies to date and to eventually marry. You know, this is not a priesthood responsibility for you. It's just something that you're supposed to consider, you know, kind of chastising the women for going on missions, saying, you know, you're supposed to be here for the men to marry. And so I think that there's this, a lot of kind of these things going on in Mormon culture as far as dating, where the men are, I almost felt like a lot of them were saying, well, actually, you know, now in a lot of more girls will be focusing on missions instead of getting married, you know, even 18-year-olds will be focusing on getting married. And I just think it's going to be, it's definitely going to be something moving forward where a lot of people will be considering. I think it's going to weird out a couple. I don't know if that's
there'll be a couple of weird years.
But I think, I think a lot of young men are going to be saying, well, you know, my girlfriend could, if we left for a mission at the same time, she'd come back before me and, you know, then maybe find somebody else, you know.
Well,
and I think that it's something that's going to, it's going to change the culture a lot. It's going to change a lot about the way that the men view the women going on the missions. It's going to change the way the women view themselves. I think it'll be very empowering for the women to know that, that, that they can go. I think ideally it would be really nice, in my personal opinion, if the length of time served was equalized as well. I don't see why, I don't really understand Elder Holland's comment, one miracle at a time. I can understand it's a big undertaking to have this age change because there's so many logistics of having so many more missionaries going out. I just saw the logistics of that, but I don't really understand why there's so many logistics around just extending the sister's service for another 6 months. But I think that moving forward, that is something that is going to affect the culture, especially of dating and of the way that we view women and men going on missions earlier.
Hannah, do you ever think it'll get to the point where there'll be a stigma for the young women like there is for the young men if they don't go on a mission, to take it to the opposite extreme?
Right. I did see a really funny meme about that just today, actually. People were passing it around where it's just it's the Ryan Gosling meme. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but Ryan, the actor, and the meme just says, "Hey girl, I actually only date RM girls now. Oh, how the tables have turned." You know, kind of playing on this stigma that LDS girls don't want to date or marry a guy who has not gone on mission. That, you know, as soon as girls find that out, they don't want to date them anymore. And there's been a lot of, I've read a lot about that actually at BYU happening, and it's really sad to hear. But I think it is an interesting idea that what if that was, became the opposite expectation, that if girls haven't gone on a mission. I mean, personally, before my faith transition, I was extremely gung-ho. I told people I wish that everybody was required to go on a mission because I think that would be awesome. But obviously, I have very different opinions now. I think that I wish that it wasn't the same obligation for the young men, because I wish that it was more of a, if you're comfortable doing this, if this is something that you want to do, then you should go. And so I think that we will see much, much more, many, many more girls go. But I don't know if it'll ever get to that point, because I think that the priesthood obligation is still a driving force in keeping the numbers so high for the young men. And because everybody is so going to be so cautious about, we've already seen them be so cautious about trying to put that kind of onus on the young women, I don't think that we'll ever get completely to that point, though I think the numbers will rise a lot.
First, you're talking about the stigma of dating, and I think the wider stigma, too, that Adam might have at least had in there, you were getting towards at the end, which is like, if you don't go as a man, you're sort of stigmatized, and it may even hurt future priesthood callings, and there's like, I wonder why you didn't go, you know, kind of thing, and I think you were starting to get to that a little bit with the women at the end there. Is there anything you'd want to say on that particular aspect of the stigma, not just whether guys would date you anymore?
I don't think that it's ever going to happen that the stigma will be reversed, because that would suggest that there's kind of a parallel to the priesthood for women, and the church is, I don't think the church is ever going to get to a point where it's going to articulate that. So I think that we're just going to see it continue on where it's very much emphasized, young women, this is not a priesthood responsibility, it's not an obligation, we just want your service if you would like to render it. So I don't think that we'll ever see that, because that would have much greater implications as far as doctrine or other ideas about women having parallel roles to the priesthood that I don't think the church is ready to articulate yet.
Well, Maxine and Adam and I will stick on after you go and speculate on all that. So future advertising there.
Oh, I appreciate it.
It's been great having you, and please join the discussion and keep pointing us to anything you're seeing at BYU in the Mormon Matters comments section. So that'd be great.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
Good. Any Maxine or Adam, anything else for Hannah before we lose her?
Nope.
No, just great points,
Hannah.
It's really exciting for me to be able to hear Hannah and have this dialogue with her, because we learn so much from each other generationally. And I mean, there's so much that I could say about that she's raised that are contextual and historical. And it's just fascinating to compare, because, for example, I'm amazed to hear that, it, you know, in this day and age, you know, was it 2012, that I'm really surprised to hear that women are still struggling with feelings of inferiority, or that they're described as inferior in the mission field.
Yeah, by the men.
I thought we had outgrown that. I thought I thought the 80s, that really shifted. In the 90s, it really shifted. And so maybe it's a matter of perspective and decade. I mean, if the elders are complaining about the sisters now, and I realize it's only some elders, I'm thinking, gee, it's probably still 10 times better than it was in the 70s, you know, or the 60s or the 50s. But that really surprises me. And it's very interesting to hear the generational differences, because overall, I can cite quotes and examples from 1898 to the present, where we've got mission leaders and elders raving about the sister missionaries and how much better they are. I mean, clear back to 1898 and how the sisters can get in where men can't, and they'll get a better hearing, and the sisters outperform the men. And so it's fascinating, because you do get both. But I'm surprised to hear that there are still elders raising that same old tired kind of mythic version of the sister who's dependent and a problem. I'm really surprised to hear that that's even happening at all at this point.
Yeah, I was pretty disappointed to hear about it too.
Yeah, I mean, I believe you.
I haven't been on a mission, and so I can't speak with full authority on that. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, but it definitely happens.
Cool.
I think what that maybe indicates too is that it's partly, it's almost a cultural thing that has to do with sexism, you know, in the culture and male privilege in the culture.
Right.
It probably grows more out of just a general male privilege in the culture that gets translated. That's how it expresses itself in the mission field. And it's just a perennial problem, because there are inequities and perceived inequities in the church. And there's sexism that is there. And so it's probably that, but it's just really fascinating to me.
Well, Hannah, go with God. Thanks. Enjoy the thing you're heading to. We appreciate having you on.
Okay, thank you.
Take care. Goodbye. There was one thought that I did have that I guess I don't need to say with her there, and that was when she talked about Elder Holland's answer about one miracle at a time. I didn't read it as anything other than, and I just want to see what you two think, Adam and Maxine, as sort of like, it was hard enough to get 12 guys or 15 guys to agree on this change, you know, and there was probably a few holdouts on the 24, you know, because it only takes one holdout on going to 24 months for women too. So I kind of read it as a like more of a nod to the practicalities of we maybe pushed them as far as we could at this particular moment. How did you guys hear that comment in the Q&A?
I mean what I was hearing and feeling when he said that is that he's in a very veiled way, he's saying we are responding to women's suggestions. We're trying to do all we can. It's slow. Be patient. Yeah. We are hearing and we are responding to what women and feminists, you know, have been complaining about. We hear you. We know. It's just really slow. Be patient. Hang in there with us. That's what I was hearing.
Yeah. Same thing with not equalizing the ages. There was something, I think it was Elder Nelson that said, we've learned that it's best to have the gap, you know, the 19-year-olds and the 21-year-olds, as far as, I'm guessing they're saying fraternization and, you know, women. And he said it was important that the women are the older ones than the men. And I think just because of stigmas about, you know, men usually go with younger women versus older women and all that stuff. So, Adam, respond to what I had asked before about how you heard the 24 months thing, and then go ahead and start riffing anything you might have to say on the women's ages still being higher than the men's.
Yeah, well, we all know that Elder Holland's very personable, and that was pretty much in character for him, I think. And and like Maxine says, it's kind of a veiled plug for being in touch with changes that the church needs to make, frankly, right?
Right.
I'm just imagining that, you know, I think you've talked about this before, Dan, where the dynamics of that quorum of 15 apostles and presidents and how they have to have unanimity and that you've maybe got some older guys who are more, you know, in spite of being inspired people that are men that are in charge of a huge organization and getting inspiration from God, they do have their own personalities and ideas on how things should happen. So that could have been also saying, not only a miracle of that all of the brethren were able to be in agreement on this, but also that you make this kind of a change. I don't think they can fully foresee all the ripple effects it's going to have. Mm-hmm. You know, he said, we don't know how many missionaries we're going to get, but I think they have to have some idea. They do demographics. I remember being at a special leadership meeting in the conference center maybe 3 or 4 years ago where Elder Richard Hinckley, who was in charge of the missionary department at the time, stated pretty frankly about the demographics, that 30% of the missionary force comes from the Wasatch Front. And you know, 19 years ago, there weren't as many babies being born, male babies being born. And so they had to get through this bubble. And so I think they have an idea. They must have pretty good access to the database of all of us in the church that are members. And I'm sure they can print out any reports that they want and run percentages. And how else could they do it and plan for a huge influx? I mean, my son, he told me yesterday that he knows at least 3 or 4 girls in his ward that are going on missions at the end of fall semester. Boom, you know. Mm-hmm. And so you multiply that by 100 and however many wards there are at BYU and BYU Idaho and wherever else, and they're going to get a huge I'm just really curious what the numbers are going to be like in January, or of course they'll stagger the callings or however they do it. But I think he's just being his personable self and just saying, let's get through this change first.
Right, exactly. Happens. Yeah, you know? I that's how I did it too. But I definitely know it was on. And he mentioned that it was on the agenda. And my guess would be there's probably even a majority for it. But the few hesitant voices, you know,
kept that from me. I still don't know. You know, Elder Nelson said we see the wisdom in the gap in the, you know, the 18 versus 19 year old. And a lot of people that I've read said, you know, why don't you just make it equal, make it the same? I tend to think that maybe there's something to that gap that maybe that kind of helps the sisters see that it's not a requirement. If you make it the same as the men, they may feel more obligated. It's not their obligation to go.
But should it be? Would you rather see it?
What's that?
Would you rather see it as sort of an equal obligation?
I don't know. I'm still thinking about it. To me, it kind of makes sense that they would make it equal, but I don't have the inspiration or the data that they have, you know, to see what happens. Maybe it boils down to, sure, we need missionaries, but we lose more men than women, and so it's okay for us to bump that up to 19 for the sisters.
Oh,
or maybe
that's
it comes down to just
point.
What Elder Nelson said. We see the wisdom in having an age difference, you know?
Yeah. Maxine, you mentioned to me, I think just on the call when I was inviting you, that there were points in your mission where sometimes you would have dinner with the elders or something and it did feel a little bit like date, you know, a date or something.
Oh, yeah.
To me, it's like, you know, for me, I was able to make the shift. And again, I was older as a missionary. You know, these are no longer women. They're sisters, you know, but my initial reaction was not attracted to, you know, I don't know. There was some way that I was able to change my mindset and things like that. And I really, in many ways, my hormones, you know, kind of lowered, and it was interesting. I served an 18-month mission. I was right in that 83, 84 where I had no choice. It was an 18-month mission just when I happened to win. But it took me like 6 months for really my hormones to almost like get back to the old bugs a jumping, you know, raging, kind of surging, driving my life force, you know, kind of point. And I'm just wondering, is there going to just be so many more elders and sisters moving into that area where it feels a lot like a date, do you think?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, in terms of predicting the effects and the outcome of this change, it's going to be very interesting to see. I think that this change is momentous for the women and for that relationship, their relationship to the rite of passage, and for women's lives and their maturation process and their relationship to the church. I think the change is huge. How this is going to play out in all the ways that it does and will and can play out is going to be really interesting to watch. The whole dating age relationship is just one of those factors. It really comes down to, again, to the rite of passage issue. This shift really tightens up and clarifies and accentuates the rite of passage for women. It equalizes men and women in a really powerful way. Having only 1 year difference in age really tightens up that difference. It tightens up the schedule for women. Instead of waiting, you know, 2-3 years to go on a mission, now it's like you go to high school, then maybe you go to college for a year, but you go on a mission. So it puts mission before marriage, where before women were always told marriage first. And then if you don't have any prospects, or they always made it sound like if nobody asks you, then go on a mission.
If you don't have a better offer. Yeah, that was the language.
I always
sometimes
found that hilarious because I had no desire to get married. All I wanted was to go on a mission. But, you know, it really completely shifts that for women. It's instead of marriage first, mission second, it's now mission first. And although they're not overtly saying that, and they wouldn't say it's mandatory for women to go on a mission, the message is very clear. We're going to give you the same option as the young men. And so by moving that rite of passage 2 years for women, 2 years younger, that's huge in a number of ways. It does close the age for dating and the dating gap. Men and women are going to feel more equal now in terms of their age. Women are going to feel more equal because they're going to feel more equally valued. They're going to feel like they're as important now as the young men. I think that's really important. I think this will help to reverse and finally hopefully get rid of those weird negative stigmas about sister missionaries. I think that it'll make men and women feel more like equal partners in the mission field, in the work. I think it will encourage the dating, the sort of pseudo date, you know, when elders and sisters work together on a project or go out to lunch together. Sometimes we used to joke about it was like a date, but definitely that will probably be a little bit more obvious or a little bit more present. Although I often found, still, because women tend to mature psychologically, emotionally, you know, at younger ages than men do, having women be a year older still allows for women to feel a sense of being older and more mature.
Yeah, I agree.
The elders are still really young, you know.
Yeah.
We always looked at the elders as really young, you know. But when it comes to that whole dating relationship, honestly, more elders were attracted to young teenage girls in the war than they were to sister missionaries. You know, those were the girls that they were catering to. But definitely, I mean, I think it'll have an effect on that. But on the other hand, I don't think that's a big, huge issue, because really when you're on a mission, you know, I think the danger of dating or the danger of falling in love or something, I think it'll probably be about the same that it's always been. It might spike a little bit more. It might happen a little more often now, but not a huge amount. The equalizing effect is huge. And I don't know if men can fully appreciate or understand the kind of thing. Only because you've had it all these years, you guys have had this incredible rite of passage. You're ordained an elder at 18. You go on a mission at 19. It's this huge rite of passage that we always felt we were lacking. So for people like me and Joanna Brooks, it is, you know, something that makes you want to cry, because having a formal rite of passage now for women at that age is just huge. Because what you have, and I would disagree with Hannah about the church acknowledging the equality and sort of the separate or parallel or female priesthood with the men, it's there. It's in place, because the missionary calling is identical for men and women. It's the same calling. You're both ministers. You both get a ministerial certificate. They call the sisters the missionary certificate, the elders the ministerial certificate, but, or at least they used to. But so the wording's a little different. But now, these last 5 years or so, they've been using the word minister and ministry for women. But it's the same calling. The only difference is the type of order or ordination. Women enter the Relief Society. They are matriculated into Relief Society at age 18. So they both have this rite of passage to elder and Relief Society, which are parallel orders, a female order and a male order. Then you go on the mission, which is this additional calling. It's a ministerial calling. And it is a form of priesthood. In my book, Women in Authority, I speculated that the missionary calling was one of four ways that women really exercise priesthood in a limited female way. So I see it as just this tremendous equalizing of men and women. And because the missionary calling is the most pronounced way that we see women functioning in a priestly role, you know, outside of the temple. So that rite of passage at 18, where, you know, the boys are going into Melchizedek priesthood, the women are going into Relief Society, and then both going on missions, you know, either 18 or 19, it's just, it really tightens up that rite of passage and really equalizes it. And I think that also in terms of marriage after the mission, in an odd way, even though they're saying, okay, sisters, you can put mission first and marriage later, it actually, I think, will encourage young people to get married younger, because they were putting off marriage until they would go to college and then go on missions, and they're kind of moving marriage later because sisters had to wait so long before they go on a mission. And a lot of sister missionaries were getting married much later. Now, because they can go on missions when they're younger, I actually think they might wind up, it might increase the numbers of people getting married in college or right after college.
Okay, Maxine, you went long and you went broad, so I want to bring it back and let Adam kind of pick up about two or three of the sections there that we did. So, Adam, do you have any comments left? Have we covered the effects of the 18 and 19-year-old gap being lesser now than the 19 and 21-year-old gap in terms of elders and sisters perhaps, you know, being extra distracting to each other? Do you have anything else on that, or are you in pretty much agreement?
Yes, Maxine said tons of great stuff. It's a huge equalizer. Absolutely. Joanna said it equalizes life narratives. It puts men and women on parallel life paths. It's going to totally change the demographics of the church.
Good. Okay. So now you're doing what she's doing. You're not answering my question. So, stick with me here and say, do you have anything else on the elders being 18 and the sisters being 19 on terms of the fraternization or the fact that they're going to be extra attracted to each other and stuff, or are you pretty much in agreement with Hannah that it's not that big a deal?
No, having them close together, I think there will be more mission marriages as far as somebody that you met in your mission, because I think of the sister missionaries that I was with on the mission. I was pretty excluded. I was in Podunkville, Mexico, and so didn't interact with the sister missionaries, but I think of the sisters that were in my MTC district, and they just seemed so much older than me at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now with them closer in age, and then you think of a guy whose birthday's late, and he's done with high school, and he doesn't turn 18 until a few months down the road, and it narrows the gap. And who knows what's going to happen? It's a big social experiment to me. Okay. I can predict
more marriages, but necessarily more like screwing up.
No, I think just because this whole emphasis that the church has had with you need to start dating again, you need to stop hanging out. Well, no matter what we do, we tell them you can't date till you're 16, and then you are going to group date until you go to college, or even then, or after the mission. And I can see young men and young women not really having any kind of opportunities to date one-on-one and experiment in courtship until after the mission. And who have they had that experience with?
Right.
They've had that experience. They've interacted in a religious setting, but fairly closely, district meetings and zone activities, whatever. Who have they interacted with? Well, these sister missionaries, and they're closer in age, closer in demographic, and they get off the mission and they stay in touch. I mean, you've got Facebook and the opportunity to stay in touch now are just incredible. And all of a sudden you come home for your mission and you add each other to your Facebook group friends and you start doing things socially that you couldn't do on a mission, and who you marry, you marry the people that you're hanging out with, and who knows? Yeah.
Good. Plus, I really do think, and this hasn't been said yet, and I want to keep moving to deeper areas than this, but there is a point where, you know, right now a young woman who doesn't go on a mission, she marries a returned missionary, she really doesn't have a sense of how to judge whether or not he has real spiritual depth. You know, he's got more knowledge than her, and he's able to quote scriptures, and so she may be lost and starry-eyed. Whereas now more Mormon women will see, you know, you really got to step up your game. You know, I'm stepping up, you know, the women are going to have these experiences where they're relying on the Lord, and they're building their own trust and their relationship with God and things like that. And I have a feeling that it's going to be harder for these returned missionaries just to have a starry-eyed young woman, you know, marry them, you know, at least, you know. Does that make any sense to you guys?
To me, it does, yeah.
Okay. And then I agree with Adam. Those were great points about the way you connect. And now that you're, this is the people I'm used to now. These are this is the group I'm used to, Sister Mysteries. And that leads us to where a second piece of what Maxine was saying, just to kind of divide her responses up into thirds or whatever, just the dynamics of elders and sisters working together. Start the conversation, Adam, to where she was sort of taking us in terms of, is this a potential getting used to period of working with somebody more as equals, and how might that affect ward dynamics when men and women work together? How might this, you know, feed into women taking more responsibilities in wards and eventually possibly priesthood? Do you want to put on your speculative glasses for any of those areas?
Well, I'm not going to go anywhere near the priesthood.
Okay.
Just because that's uncharted territory. I haven't even thought about it. But
okay.
But as far as making more young women capable of handling, and not that they were never giving them more experiences in leadership, definitely, yeah.
Awesome.
That's what I meant to say. Is you come off a mission, and you can step into a Relief Society presidency calling at college without skipping a beat.
Right.
No problem whatsoever. And definitely the having more sister missionaries in the field will help that dynamic of, yeah, we can work together as equals and not have it and not have there be the distraction of it, the distraction of attraction, I guess, like we've got. It really seems like in the church, why can't we have a ward clerk who's a sister,
right?
Or some of those callings that don't necessarily need the priesthood, but the church has to separate. I can't even give an elderly. I took my 85-year-old home teachee to who's a widow. I took her to state conference last month. And after I did it, I was alone. My wife couldn't come. After I did it, I thought, holy cow, I just broke a rule. And because you're not supposed to be in the same car together, even though she could be my grandma.
Right.
You know, so maybe we can get to the point where the church, the brethren, have more trust in individuals not to get into trouble or whatever, just because they're giving each other a ride to church or working together in the same office with a closed door. You know, would be a big step.
Good point.
Beyond that, I'll let Maxine take it.
Well, Maxine, one thing I know that your article in the Women Authority book talks about is, you know, that there's been lots of experimentation in the missions through the years. We had an all-sister zone in my mm-hmm. mission and all-sister mm-hmm. districts. Wouldn't you guess that if we're up to 35-40% sister missionaries, we're going to see a lot more of that? So what Adam's talking about, leadership experience, will certainly jump up.
This is powerfully equalizing, and partly because of the numbers. I predict a huge spike in the number of sisters. In fact, in the 20th century, the numbers tended to be around 20%. I mean, prior to World War II, they were 22% sisters. During World War II, the numbers spiked to 40% of the missionary force was women, because men were serving in the military during World War II. And then after World War II, the percentage went back down to 15% sisters, and it stayed there until 1980. And then, starting in the 1980s, it went back to 20%, and 22% has hovered in those low 20s. So what I'm predicting is that with this shift, so many more women are going to go on missions. It's going to jump right back to that 40%, that high, all-time high spike that we saw in the 20th century during World War II. And I predict that it will even exceed that. I predict, putting on my prophetess hat,
woo-hoo!
I predict we'll see 50-50. I think the numbers, because of this change, we will end up seeing the numbers in the mission field reflecting the numbers, the percentage of men and women in the church. It'll be closer to 50-50 eventually because of this change, because I think women want so much to have a sense of equal importance and equal value. And I don't think they could have done anything that is more equalizing of men and women, including in relationship to priesthood, because the missionary calling is inseparably linked to the priesthood. I mean, my article goes into this at length about how the calling of a missionary is inseparably linked to the idea of preaching the gospel, building up the church, and it's linked to ordination to priesthood. In the DNC, if you're going to preach the gospel, you've either got to be an elder, or you've got to be ordained, or have some kind of priesthood authority, according to the DNC. Well, and so sister missionaries receive a ministerial certificate, but also they are initiated into or matriculated into the Relief Society at age 18, just like the elders are into the Melchizedek priesthood. So you have this incredibly, it's parallel but equal standing. And so,
at least according to Mike Quinn, who's also his articles in your book, you know, it hasn't traditionally been seen as parallel as you're putting it forth.
Okay.
But Mike and others make that argument that Joseph Smith had that full intention.
It's not just Mike Quinn. I mean, in my book, we explored all the different ways that women were having access to the power of God and mainly to the authority of God. The book is Women and Authority because it was exploring, okay, we know women have access to the power of God. How do they have access to the authority of God? They have it through the Relief Society as a parallel female order. They have it through the temple where the two orders come together in a united order. Right. And then we have it in the missionary calling where sisters serve as certified ministers of the gospel. So if you're a minister of the gospel, so I'm talking specifically about the missionary aspect of priesthood, which is ministry. And you are a minister of the gospel. So it's incredibly equalizing to have men and women go at roughly the same age. It's going to have a huge, huge impact. And you asked another question, and I can't remember what your other question was. I was going to...
Well, I again, Adams wants to stay away from the pathway to priesthood. One of the things I thought about with the sister zones, and there's going to just naturally have to be a lot more people in explicit leadership, I would guess, too. You know, Adam was talking about perhaps, you know, ward clerks being women after this greater comfort there. I would see interviews for baptism. There's no priesthood declared in that. There's going to be a lot more stuff. My prediction long before actual ordination of women to equal priesthood offices and things like that is we are going to see things like Relief Society presidents doing a lot more worthiness interviews for young women and things like that. And I just can't see anything but this sort of more women going on missions as being, you know, not only helpful to that happening later, but just the general comfort level with women preaching, teaching, you know, having something to that men will just kind of, just the way men are growing up now with mothers who are a little bit more feminist oriented than, you know, the generation before it. Same thing's going to happen with just the mission experience.
Oh yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I'm not talking about ordaining women to male offices. I'm not talking about that at all. I'm talking about how in Mormon theology, Mormon history, Mormon doctrine, Mormon church organization, the equality of men and women is already there. It's inherent, and it's inherent in the system, but we're not fully seeing it because in some ways it's parallel. In some ways it's not. In some ways it's united. In the temple it's united, but in the church it's parallel.
Right.
And I do think it's going to make a big difference for how men and women work together in the wards and how men and women see each other. Because just equalizing this, it's kind of equalizing the playing field in a ministerial calling, you know, in one of the four ways that I identified that women do have access to priesthood, even though I would call it a women's, it's a women's order. It's a women's aspect of priesthood and, or a parallel priesthood, but it's clearly there. They call the elder missionaries elders and the sister missionaries sisters. There are differences in titles. There are differences in the name, the type of order that men and women have between male priesthood offices and then the Relief Society and its roles and its offices. But there is an equivalency there. And I think this is going to sharpen that. I think this is going to help people to see and help women to feel, men and women to see and feel that equivalency that I've been saying for 25 years is there already. It's inherent in the theology and in the system as it's currently constituted. We just haven't sharpened that, brought it into focus. And I think this is going to help bring that into focus and to illuminate or excavate. I'm always using the word excavate. It's going to help excavate and reveal the inherent equality that Joseph Smith embedded in Mormon theology and the church structure during that first 20 years, the equality between the genders. And it's not all about parallel or separate but equal. It's all different types and different levels of equality. We have parallel equality with Relief Society and priesthood quorums. We have unified equality in the temple order and in the missionary calling.
Well, super interesting stuff. Maybe we'll just need to do another podcast on what you're talking about there with the different orders and stuff. I know that I've heard to you and talked with you enough to know that there's a lot of depth there that we can't get to. Are you guys as enthusiastic as I am? It sounds like you are.
Oh, yeah. I am. I'm feeling like I'm probably more enthusiastic than most people because I'm a woman and because I know what a difference this would have made in my life. And because as a scholar, you know, of Mormon studies and of women's studies in Mormonism and feminist theology, I really get this. I get how huge this is on all levels.
Awesome.
And I stand all amazed at the genius and inspiration of the brethren in choosing this as a major innovation that was so simple. It was so obvious. It was right there. And yet look at the far-reaching implications of this in equalizing men and women in the church. I'm really quite in awe of this change.
Well, I hope it unfolds in the way that we think it will. Adam, was there something you wanted to say in response there?
I'm more excited, definitely more excited for the women of the church than the men. I look at some of the boys we got coming out of high school, and Maxine is absolutely right. I think women are more mature at that age emotionally. Could probably handle the 18-year-old thing, but, and 18-year-old boys, I pray for them. I'm sure it'll work out, but on the individual basis, case by case, there may be a few that struggle, but in general, I think it's a good thing for the church, yeah.
There was the line from Elder Nelson in response to a question as one of the reporters asked, what have the mission president said about the 18-year-olds that have already been serving in these, you know, different countries? And he says the mission president reported that they're sweeter, purer, and smarter.
Yeah.
So we'll hope for that.
Yeah, I jotted that down, and I'm not sure that I agree with him, but I don't know if that was him saying that or quoting the mission president's.
Well, that's what I think he thought it was quoting the mission president. But it's possible, too, in these other countries that, you know, the fact that they were doing the 18-year-old experiments because of military service obligations,
right,
and schooling, the way the school systems worked and things like that. Yeah, who knows? It's equivalent. But I agree with you. There's going to be a few more of the not ready to serve kind of guys and feeling like, well, I'm not supposed to wait anymore. And it's just going to – so much is going to depend on how the local leaders really work with the best interests of the missionary in mind and the big picture stuff. And so,
well, I also heard him in that statement. When I heard that statement, I immediately thought, you know, I heard him saying, gee, we want to keep these sweet, you know, kids.
Instead of getting them jaded
year. we want to keep them pure. We want to help protect them from some of the dangers out there. We want to give them this incredible spiritual rite of passage at a time of great change and great temptation. And we want to give them that formation, that spiritual formation and initiation path right then to help them retain and keep some of that sweetness and that purity and that spirituality. And so that they maybe won't be pulled off into some of the pretty awful things that can happen, you know, to kids, especially these days with drug networks being what they are and porn networks. And, you know, so I think, you know,
right.
You're kind of talking about that too.
Well, in some ways, what you're saying right there is, you know, you and Hannah would be different slightly in the keeping them pure and stuff like that. And she might say keeping them indoctrinated, keeping them from exploring the wider world that she's seeing. And I think there's something, you know, that's an important wrestle for us to think about both ends. So I was glad to have you emphasize. I was glad to have you on that side.
Yeah, it's always a two-sided coin. Anytime you're talking about either a spiritual life versus a kind of a materialist or a hedonistic life, you know, there are positives and negatives to to both.
Yeah, and you're saying in some ways there's worse things than being indoctrinated.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Or at least there, because again, I think life is going to serve people up. You know, whether maybe some of the folks that are in that cynical mode or whatever, life's eventually going to serve you up the wider palate, and you're going to have to face it sooner or later. And so, I'm on the side of it. There's worse things in the world than staying in the Mormon path for a lot longer with a few more blinders on, because life will serve you up, and during that period of time. You know, obviously, some people come home from their missions without it having really transformed them, but just that experience of, I am out here, I only have X amount of things to do, the palette is so much smaller, I have to rely on God every day.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there praying for people who I would never have even encountered. And I'm seeing people from different socioeconomic classes or different kinds of, you know, drug abuse and sexual abuse lives changing their hearts. And my prayer, you know, I'm just feeling God's love for them. Those are the kinds of things that, man, I'll take that and be indoctrinated a bit longer, because somehow or other, even when I'm, you know, out thinking myself out of the things that might make me feel the church is squeezing me and stuff, man, I'm still going to have the fact that I have felt something real and my heart's changed. And, you know, I just think the odds are better, you know, stick with the indoctrination and hope for the spiritual change like you're talking about versus like, oh no, they're just going to catch you and keep you and keep you as the pawn in their game longer.
I agree with you. And I just have to say that's exactly what I was starting to get at earlier, because I think that's partly the motive for doing this, is to help both young men and young women by lowering that age, to give them a stronger foundation at an earlier age before they start encountering a lot of the really hard stuff that's out there. As you said, it's out there. It hits us at all different ages of life. It can hit us. It hits us in our 20s. It hits us in our 30s. Life is always going to serve up some pretty difficult challenges and tests and trials. And so by giving young men and women that foundation that much earlier, you're giving them a stronger foundation with which to deal with all those things. And awesome. I think I can only say positive things about it.
Adam, anything to close with?
Nope. It's been a great discussion. I have to get one little bit of humor in there. We're going to have to change the primary song to Hope They Call Me on a Mission When I've Grown a Foot and Three Quarters.
<You know? laughs> Just a little bit less. Yeah. Awesome, dude. Hey, well, thanks, everybody. Thanks, listeners. We hope that this has been something you've enjoyed going on this journey with us, and it'll help you in your thinking. And I know a lot of you are in leadership roles, and maybe some of this will play there, and others of you are in that situation with a child coming up, and this is there's going to be great discussion. So I hope we found some things in here for you to do that. We hope you'll come to the blog and get in the comment section and do it. While you're there, I always hope that you'll decide to donate to the podcast. It really helps. I have to thank everybody who does donate, who does subscribe on a regular basis. Every time I get a message that somebody has, you know, donated again, or their subscription has dinged their credit card, it's just so affirming and so wonderful to me. And I'm sending out blessings and love to you. So hopefully you're feeling that back. But just anything that helps on the financial end of this is terrific, though. I will keep doing it even if I never get any money. So thank you for what you're doing, though, in that area for my family. Okay, guys, wish you a good night.
Yeah, well, thanks, Dan. This has been really fun.
Good stuff. Cue the music.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. To keep this podcast alive, or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was brought to you by Brittany and Clayton Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening.